You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN Energy's daily blog, the oil and gas industry's go-to source for insight. Every day, we cover commodity fundamentals, industry changes, and developing trends across energy markets. And now, we're making it easier than ever to enjoy our blogs. Whether it's on your drive into work, while you're at the office, or at home walking the dog, settle in, turn the volume up, and enjoy.
Wednesday, April 7, 2021. Back in Black, a look at Monolith's turquoise hydrogen and carbon black plant in Nebraska. Published by Jason Ferguson. When it comes to blogs on the developing hydrogen sector, many subjects can seem quite foreign to the traditional hydrocarbons expert. We have found ourselves spending a considerable amount of time over the last few months slowly peeling back the layers on this sector in an effort to be prepared should hydrogen enter a new phase of importance in the energy industry. Today's blog is likely a much more straightforward one for the typical hydrocarbon-focused reader. That's because, in our view, Monolith Materials' unique process for transforming natural gas into turquoise hydrogen while sequestering the carbon is easier to wrap your head around. This is not just because of the company's clear goals and process, but also because what it does is proving to be economically viable. That's not always the case when we discuss hydrogen, so covering Monolith's operations is a welcome break. Today, we detail a truly one-of-a-kind method of low-carbon hydrogen production. Hydrogen can be produced in many ways, and we have covered the basics so far in our hydrogen blog series. In HELP Part 2, we outlined how almost all the production of H2 in the U.S. is based on natural gas, through a process called steam methane reforming, or SMR. Chief among the other methods is electrolysis, which we also covered in the same blog. Electrolysis has many advocates, given it requires only water and electricity to operate and doesn't directly produce carbon emissions. If you are following our weekly hydrogen billboard, you will know that electrolysis projects are starting to proliferate around the world and, to a lesser extent, here in North America. The process we discuss today has some similarities to both SMR and electrolysis, so, without further ado, let's take a look at Monolith Materials' operations and technology. It's not often that we discuss an energy company operating in Nebraska that got its start in Palo Alto, California, but that's where the Monolith story began. Way back in 2013, the company began building its pilot plant in the San Francisco Bay Area, utilizing technology acquired from Caverna that converts natural gas into hydrogen and carbon black. Wait, what is carbon black? More on that in a minute, but just know that by 2014, Monolith's pilot facility in Seaport, California, was on its way to a four-year demonstration period with the primary goal of producing industrial-grade solid carbon black and what it calls turquoise hydrogen. See our original HELP blog for more on blue and green hydrogen. Given the positive results from the California pilot facility, Monolith began building its first industrial-scale plant in Hallam, Nebraska in late 2018. It's named Olive Creek 1, or OC1 for short. OC1 is capable of producing 5,000 metric tons per year of turquoise hydrogen, along with 15,000 metric tons per year of carbon black. If you've been following our hydrogen blog series, you might have heard our last blog on how to convert hydrogen's various production units. Without going off on too much of a tangent, we would point out that OC1 is capable of producing more hydrogen, regardless of whether it's considered blue, green, or turquoise, than any existing electrolyzer in North America. It also is larger than just about any of those being planned, which we track in Hydrogen Billboard. That said, it wasn't hydrogen production that initially drove the strategy behind Monolith's operations, but more on that later. First, a little more detail on how OC1 works. You might want to take a look at Figure 2 in the blog on the website today. It shows the process flow diagram for OC1, which takes as primary inputs 100% renewable electricity and natural gas. We would like to note that the facility is capable of using renewable natural gas sourced from places like landfills and sewage plants, but OC1 can also utilize conventional natural gas taken from transmission pipelines and currently has an interconnect with the Northern Natural Gas, or NNG, pipeline that extends from the Permian to the upper Midwest. What's more, the Monolith process has the ability to use other light hydrocarbons such as ethane or propane as feedstock, though it currently takes all of its feedstock supply in the form of natural gas from NNG. The other major input to the process, which operates at over 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit, is electricity. OC1 gets power from the Nebraska Public Power District, or NPPD, and offsets it through renewable energy credits purchased by Monolith. Once inside Monolith's reactors, which utilize plasma torch technology to reach the temperatures required, the natural gas is converted into low-carbon hydrogen and solid carbon, known as carbon black, through a process known as pyrolysis. While we don't know a whole lot about carbon black, we do know that it is used in the manufacture of a wide array of products, such as tires, outdoor plastics, and cables, and makes up a global market valued around $20 billion. At 15,000 metric tons per year, the carbon black produced from OC1 makes up a small, but valuable, piece of the wider market. In fact, the economics of the carbon black production are so good that the turquoise hydrogen coming off OC1 is essentially produced for free. The increasing interest in hydrogen just as Monolith begins production has been a nice bonus for the project's backers, including Warburg Pincus, Azimuth Capital Management, Cornell Capital LLC, Imperative Ventures, and Mitsubishi Heavy Industries. In fact, things are going so well with OC1 that Monolith is expected to make a final investment decision, or FID, on a second phase, Olive Creek 2 or OC2. The new facility will be located adjacent to the existing plant in Nebraska and will secure the 2 million megawatt hours a year of renewable energy it will need from new wind farms and solar facilities that will connect to the NPPD system over the next few years. Nebraska is one of the leading producers of wind power and has tremendous potential for solar as well. OC2 is 2 to 3 times larger than OC1 and will produce 180,000 metric tons per year of carbon black, along with a commensurate amount of turquoise hydrogen each year. If you're thinking that's a lot of hydrogen, you would be right. In order to produce that much low-carbon hydrogen via electrolysis, using the assumptions we outlined in our last blog we referenced before, it would take over 400 megawatts of proton exchange membrane, or PEM, electrolyzer running around the clock. That would dwarf any existing PEM electrolysis plant on the planet. What does Monolith plan to do with all this hydrogen? Turn it into ammonia, initially, while also working on plans to scale up further. Plans call for OC2 to supply its hydrogen to reactors that will then turn it into ammonia for the fertilizer industry, a subject we covered a few blogs back in Flip the Switch. Which brings up an interesting point in the current approach to hydrogen offtake. While it seems that many green hydrogen proponents are pinning the success of the hydrogen market on its application in a wide range of uses from cars to planes to the steel industry, growth in existing industries like fertilizer production that consume hydrogen are likely to open the door for processes like Monolith's. We think it is likely that others looking to produce low-carbon hydrogen might be well-served to turn their end-market focus to existing industries that currently utilize hydrogen produced by processes that have relatively high emissions. Of course, no one needs to convince Monolith Materials, which is carving out a solid position in the U.S. low-carbon hydrogen market and looks set for continued growth. Back in Black was written by Brian Johnson, Angus Young, and Malcolm Young and appears as the first song on side 2 of AC/DC's 7th studio album of the same name. Released as the first single from the LP in July 1980, the song went to number 37 on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart. It has been certified 3X Platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America, or RIA. Known for its powerful opening guitar riff, the song is a tribute to AC/DC's former lead singer Bon Scott, who died in February 1980 and was replaced by Brian Johnson. Personnel on the record were Brian Johnson, on lead vocals Angus Young, on lead guitar Malcolm Young, on rhythm guitar and backing vocals, Cliff Williams, on bass and backing vocals, and Phil Rudd, on drums. Back in Black was recorded in April and May 1980. Produced by Mutt Lang at Compass Point Studios in Nassau, Bahamas, during tropical storms and hurricane warnings, the LP was released in July 1980. It went to number 4 on the Billboard Top 200 Albums chart, and has been certified 25X Platinum by the RIAA. It has sold more than 50 million copies worldwide, making it the second best-selling album in history. Michael Jackson's Thriller is number 1. 4 singles were released from the album. Recording studios still use Back in Black to tune the acoustics of a room. AC/DC is an Australian rock and roll band formed in Sydney in 1973 by brothers Malcolm and Angus Young. They have released 17 studio albums, 3 live albums, 2 soundtrack albums, 1 EP, and 47 singles. 21 members have passed through the band since its formation. Bon Scott died in 1980 and Malcolm Young in 2017. The band continues to record and tour.
This has been the RBN Energy Blogcast. Thanks for listening.